Hello, everyone. Welcome to an informative Q&A session on the treatment of COPD. My name is Victoria Bradley, and I will be the moderator for today's interview. I'm excited to have Dr. Bing Shui with me today to learn more about this topic. Dr. Shui is a board-certified pulmonologist who has been in practice for over 20 years. He has expertise in treating several conditions, including but not limited to sleep apnea, COPD, and asthma. It's so great to have you here with us today, Dr. Shui.
I'm very glad to be here with you today.
All right, so let's get started. My first question for you today is, what are the most important key takeaways providers should be aware of in the latest 2024 revisions of the GOLD guidelines?
Sure, I can start with that. The latest revision of Global Initiative for Obstructive Lung Disease, better known as GOLD guideline, has been revised in 2023. There's a couple takeaway message I'd like to share with you today. It is a most recent up-to-date and evidence-based guideline as far as I can share with you. There are several things I want to share with you today. They're including diagnosis, assessment, and treatment of COPD. Let's start with the diagnosis of COPD. I cannot tell you how many times I see my patient in my clinic for the very first time with a diagnosis of COPD, yet without any simple spirometry. That is very important for patient to get a spirometry so we can have a definitive answer for the patient and as we move forward. So by GOLD guideline, FEV1 over FVC ratio should be less than 0.7 before we give a patient a diagnosis of COPD. So second thing was redefine the latest version of GOLD is assessment of COPD. There used to be the matrix of 2x2 was introduced back in 2011. The process has been refined, and the most recent one has changed to three category instead of a four category, which I can discuss in more detail on next questions. And last but not least is about the management and treatment of the COPD. The bronchodilator have remained to the mainstays of COPD patient. Those includes in LABA, LAMA, combination of the two, or additional of ICS. What we know from many years of research that most patient may not benefit from ICS use, and the patient will benefit from ICS use probably would be the ones with peripheral eosinophil greater than 300 cells per microliter. Those are the latest things I can share with you in a very brief fashion. By no means they're in depth or comprehensive.
Thank you for highlighting those important revisions. You mentioned diagnostic criteria and its importance in patient care in your first point. Can you walk us through the assessment algorithm to guide management decisions in a symptomatic patient recently diagnosed with COPD?
Absolutely. I think that is the key. That's one of the key takeaway from this latest version of GOLD. As briefly mentioned in our previous conversation, back in 2011, there was 2x2 matrix. So on the x-axis, there's symptomatology of patient. There are two clinical tools we can use, either the modified MRC Disney score or CAS score. On the y-axis, including the frequency of exacerbation as well as patient's FEV1 number. That has been used since 2011. As many practitioners aware, FEV1 is not very precise on a individual patient-wise. For that very reason, I think GOLD have been getting away from the using FEV1, just focus on patient symptomatology as well as frequency of the exacerbation. For that very reason, so A and B, group A and B have remained the same. So those are the patient with symptomatology and exacerbation less than once per year. The new group or category, the patient would be E, which includes those patients with any type of symptomatology with exacerbation at least twice per year or one hospitalization one year. So those are categorized in the group E, so in place of the previous C and D group.
I appreciate your insights on this question, considering the
No
revised
problem.
guidelines. Switching gears a bit here, how do you characterize patients with pre-COPD, and are there any specific disease manifestations that you look out for?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. It is a old concept. It's also an evolving concept, has been increasingly recognized in the field of respiratory medicine. Simply based on the fact that COPD, we all recognize, is a chronic progressive disease with some identifiable risk factors. Sometimes patient can have symptom, share some pathophysiology factor before the full syndrome or the definitive diagnosis of FEV1 over FVCO ratio less than 0.7 identified. So it is interesting to keep on your radar screen. Unfortunately, there's no specific sign symptom I can share with you to identify those patients. I think it's very important just keep on the radar screen. I suspect as time goes on, there will be more come out from the GOLD guideline.
That's very interesting. Thank you for sharing. Moving on, can you explain the concern when exacerbations cluster, and when that happens, is it more likely that the patient will have another event?
In general, I agree with that assessment. I think we all, for those of us been doing this days in, days out, there's certainly a subset of patient have a cluster of exacerbation. Sometimes they can be identified easily due to environmental factors, such as during the winter time. The place I practice in Michigan, we have long winter, so that's what we see more so. Other times, patient has uncontrollable comorbidities such as CHF, or either they're newly diagnosed or poorly controlled, which can trigger COPD exacerbations. Those are considered sort of low-hanging fruit we can identify. Unfortunately, that leave us some other patients still have a cluster of exacerbation without any identifiable etiology. For that reason, there's active research going on trying to identify any biomarker for those patients. So as we move forward, I look forward to any new evidence or new research results. And overall, this reflects the complexity of COPD exacerbation and the need for us as a physician to take an individualized approach for each patient to do our best to identify any identified etiology.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with that need for an individualized approach. A great point to mention. I do have one more question for you today, and
Sure.
that is, what is your expert opinion on the use of pulmonary rehabilitation to help educate patients and teach them breathing exercises and techniques? And does it offer considerable benefits, and are there any risks providers need to be aware of?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Pulmonary rehab is truly dear and near to my heart. I strongly believe it is a essential and integral part of any long-term successful COPD management regimen. I always think about it as one of the four fundamental pillars of maintaining clinical stability in patients with COPD. What are those? Tobacco cessation without saying it, proper prescription of the inhaler along with proper use of inhaler is also critical. And then comes the pulmonary rehab along with prevention such as necessary vaccination. So multiple clinical trials, as most of us are aware, have clearly demonstrated pulmonary rehab improves patient symptomatology, quality of life, and decreased health care utilization and potential some mortality benefit. My personal experience is no different from those, which is great. I cannot say that about a lot of other clinical research in terms of real-world data. So for that reason, I strongly recommend to most of my patients with moderate to severe COPD patient to go through pulmonary rehab. Meanwhile, I really do not see any significant risk factor as long as the patient is doing the pulmonary rehab under professional health provider with close monitoring. With the COVID pandemic, there was some virtual pulmonary rehab program developing. So that has to be seen and to be determined what the risk factor versus the benefit from that standpoint. So overall, I truly believe it is a very integral part of treatment for patient with COPD.
Yes, I appreciate your passion for pulmonary rehab. It sounds like a crucial aspect of COPD management, and it's good to hear that there's little to no risk for your perspective. It's nice to
Absolutely.
know that these programs exist within the treatment model for sure.
Yeah, just it was very limited resources, and some patients had to wait for a long time to be enrolled in pulmonary rehab. My personal experience, 9 out of 10 patients do have a positive experience and good results. Found that.
Good, good. So this concludes our interview for today. I want to take a moment to thank you just for your participation and for sharing your expertise on the treatment of COPD with us today. It was a pleasure to have you, and I look forward to staying in touch.
You're very welcome.